The Perth Football Podcast is proudly brought to you by Macron Store Perth, an industry leader in quality teamwear specialising in grassroots, semi-pro and professional team attire. Visit the Macron Sports Hub Perth Facebook page for more. Thank you to Macron for helping us keep the pod running and for their continuous involvement in community sport.
Perth Football Podcast. We are doing a pubcast. I'm Kalichio Sunwa. It's a pubcast full-time whistle. We've got Tommy Dolman and Josh Chiat joining us. We'll go straight into it with Tommy. Tommy, how's the chips and drink here at the Hyde Park Hotel?
Pretty good, Kalichio. Thank you, Josh, for purchasing. Well, I think it's Josh anyway.
It is Josh, mate. It's the first time in a long time, but that's for another day.
Would you like a right of reply, Josh?
Under the bus. It's 31 seconds and he's under the bus.
What, you have anything to add on that, Kalichi?
I think I've said my piece, Josh. How are you?
I'm very good. Until that comment, I regret paying for it. I won't be doing it in future.
We are shocked that you paid for it in the first place. Anyway, let's get straight into it. We've witnessed a plethora of games in the NPL men's and in the NPL women's. It's been just in the NPL men's, it's just been the most classic NPL that we've ever seen, where it's been no goals in 10 minutes, a couple goals at halftime, and then just an explosion of goals. Josh,
can we talk about the big story?
What's the big story?
I was literally seconds away from a 6-from-6 round in the tipping.
Yes.
And it was stolen from me. I initially, based on the apps, I thought that the referee had played 13 minutes of injury time down in Armadale, which I demand an investigation. It turned out it was actually the Peter Jakobs equaliser was actually scored in the 96th minute. Still far too much injury time for me. I'm disgusted
that. I understand. Alex Nova would have played 2 minutes of injury time and said, look, we're going home.
I think that they knew what was going on with my tipping, and I think I've been beaten by the same people that try to mess with the spread in college sports.
Yes, Josh. The world revolves around you, and the reason why it was done was to screw you out of your 6-from-6 score, which only 4 people knew about. But you were down at the Stirling Macedonia Bayswater City game. It ended up 2-0 for Bayswater City with a second half double for Jonathan Steins off the bench, from what I understand. Tell us about the game and tell us about the goals.
It was just like the rumble in the jungle. It was Muhammad Ali on the ropes against George Foreman. Massive rope-a-dope performance from Bayswater City. Absorbed about 85 minutes of pressure from Stirling Macedonia, who were dominant with the ball, but just couldn't create anything in the front third. Really strong. I think all of their chances just about came from outside of the area. And John Steins came off the bench. Bayswater just have the artillery. They have it, and he said in an interview with us later, they've almost got a second 11 that they reckon's as good as their first 11. They brought Steins off the bench, and Asmo Diarra. There were a couple other players that came off. Oh, Declan Hargreaves didn't start the game, so he's come off the bench to shore up the midfield in the latter stages of the game. Fergie left the subs late. He eventually brought on Bilalowski and Hatfield when they were already a goal down, I believe, or just before they conceded that first goal, and they just looked like they were.
I think he's a terrific young talent, but you've just mentioned that it's Bilalowski coming off the bench and the other people coming off the bench for Bayswater City are Steins, Hargreaves.
Yeah, they're established stars in the competition, right? So it just looked like Stirling were running out of legs in those last 10 minutes, and it was bizarre because Bayswater just hadn't really created anything almost the entire game. They had a chance that came from a scramble in a corner where Liam Price made a good save in the first half, which actually just as I arrived at the ground. The game could have been very different if a long-range hurlitzer from Brent Quick, who I don't believe he scored very many goals in the NPL men's competition. It struck
one of the best right backs in the league, but I'll tell you more about that later.
It's gone straight past Lewis Taliano in goals. He had absolutely no no chance with it, but it's cannoned back off the post. Nobody was able to follow up. But it was interesting when you look at Kieran Byrne, had a big impact off the bench last week, but he was shut out by the centre-back pairing of Palmateer and Jackson Stevens. Stephen in particular had a good game. I thought Bafabusha for Bayswater, obviously he's come over from Inglewood. We saw him more in a number 10 role for Inglewood, but playing in a deep lying role alongside Tiat Kuhl basically mocked Calvin Whitney out of the game for large periods. Whitney had a few good touches, maybe one too many pirouettes. He tried about three or four of them. He generally got the ball at the end of it, but it was just that finishing touch that they didn't really have at all across the front four or five players.
So I'm just going to ask you before we go on to Tommy and talk about his game, but is this a... Again, three games and you don't want to read too much into it, but is this more of an off day for Sterling, or is this much more of a continuance of last year where it was how do you score a goal? It's moments of magic and moments of brilliance.
I don't think it was an off day for Sterling because they were dominant throughout most of the game, and it's just about that creation in the final third. And I think it's something that they've clearly got to work on with the new crop of players, you know, the players that they've brought into the side to complement what they have. They have some concerns with Giles Davies potentially having a little hamstring injury right at the end of the game, which is a tough one for them. They will have Deej Spaseski coming back in from his suspension, so they have a ready-made replacement there. They also have a little bit of, you know, inconsistency in that back four, where last year they still have Quick and Matthews, but last year and the year before that they had Palmateer and Yankoloski. Now they've got Douglas and Stewart and Bosdet, which, yeah, so that'll be one to watch, maybe what happens with that back two or back three. If you look at the game, even though it was only round three, it was a big one, right? Because they're both challenging for the title. Sterling have now dropped two games, and if one team really runs away with it with their results, we don't know who that's going to be at the moment. Could be the New Boys Western Knights, but you drop two games, that could be, you know, your chance of winning the title gone. And you look at Bayswater, for them, they've got to be hugely happy with how they've gone the first three rounds of the season. Got something against Armidale, which is probably the toughest place to go away from home. Beat Stirling Macedonia, who are title challengers, and probably the second toughest place to go away from home. And beat Kingsway, who are also expected to be title challengers. So they've got a great head start going into the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, and that, I was just about to touch on that, actually, the fact that they've come through those first three fixtures with a pretty good return in points. I think they're going to be very impressed with that. And a clean sheet today. I've been harking on about it all pre-season and in the night series and in our season preview podcast is clean sheets and keeping those goals out is going to be integral to Bayswater's chances in the league this season. And as Josh says, it's maybe not going to be the most blistering attacking display that we're going to see from Bayswater this season, and they had to absorb a lot of pressure to get through and get 3 points today. But I think you've got to take a lot of positives out of that when you can go to a tough place like Stirling. You can grind it out, you can stay in the game, and you can invariably nick two late goals with your class. That's a sign of a team who is going to be right up there fighting until the very end.
Before we go, I was going to ask, what did the goal look like for Bayswater? How did they score those two goals? Because again, I'm really curious to see what goals look like for teams.
So the first goal, quickly taken free kick that they won off Lewis Italiano, goal kick, went out to a free Mitchinson on the left, crossed it in, and John Steins got across his marker and flicked it in at the near post. Really good cross from Sam Mitchinson. And the second goal, Sterling kind of overloaded, beaten on the counter-attack. Steins received the ball back post, took a nice touch inside Danny Douglas and put it into the top corner, past Liam Price off a deflection.
All right, look, we'll be back in a quick second and we'll speak to Tommy Dolman.
Bays is on fire. Scratch that, Steins is on fire. That was what was ringing out of the Macedonia Park change rooms after John Steins scored two late goals to vanquish the host Sterling Macedonia 2-0 for Bayswater City. I've got him right here with me now, John Steins. That must have felt absolutely magnificent for you, especially given that they were your first minutes of the season coming off the bench. What did it mean scoring those two big goals at the end?
Oh, mate, it felt a lot because, you know, I've been injured, so I haven't, you know, played a lot of games the last couple of weeks. So I think Gary just wanted to get me on. Also, he knows I can score goals, but, you know, I just wanted to get a bit of fitness so I can start to get a good run in into the season. And look, to come on with, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes and to score two, it's what I do really, but, you know, it was just good to get back amongst it.
You've played in a few iterations of this Bayswater team, and obviously a lot of discussion about the signings that you've brought in the off-season. Potentially that's pushed you into the outer a little bit, and you were able to show your wares today. What does it mean having that level of competition through the side?
Oh, it can only mean, you know, good things for the team, really. The thing is if you're not performing or if you do get injured, you know, there's someone ready to take your place straight away. We've got maybe two boys in every position, and each, you know, other teams look at us and this up second 11 is probably, you know, would be very, very competitive in this league. So that's the thing. Once I got injured, I knew I had to work my way back into the team, and, you know, just happy to get those goals and let everyone know what I'm still capable of.
Bigger picture, two of your title foes vanquished. Well, not quite vanquished, we're only three games into the season, but Stirling Macedonia and Olympic Kingsway, two wins in a row against teams that are going to be challenging for the Cup. So that must feel pretty big. Did this win feel a little bit more important for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, last year, the league, as you know, the league was so tight. All the points matter here, and really when you're coming up against your rivals, these are the ones that you really want to win, because you know taking points away from them can mean so much. It's not really just 3 points, it's, you know, momentum for us, it's killing their momentum. So every time we do that, it's not just about the 3 points. I think it's setting a standard and, you know, letting the rest of the league know what we're about. So.
And tell us a little bit about the game as well. Obviously you came on towards the end, but it was that classic rope-a-dope. You just looked like you were nowhere for about 30 minutes in that second half, and then you ran over the top of them. You maybe could have scored one or two more.
Yeah. Look, it probably wasn't our best performance, and the boys know that as well, but that's the hallmarks of a good team, really, is that when you're not playing well, when we were able to hold off Stirling. Because, look, I reckon they were the better team today, if we're being honest with ourselves. They played the ball a lot better, but we just took our chances, and that's really what, like I say, the hallmarks of a good team, and, you know, we've got to keep that going.
Thank you very much, Steinsy. Enjoy the celebrations.
Thank you very much, mate.
Thank you so much to John, and thank you so much to Josh for the interview as well. We'll switch gears and talk about the Kingsway Fremantle City game. Looking at this game, obviously Kingsway coming off the back of a pretty poor result from their standards, and Fremantle coming off the back of a terrific result for them in their first game back in 38 years, I'm pretty sure it was, Josh. So, Tommy, you were down at the grounds. Tell us about the game. Who scored? What was the game like? What were some of the takeaways that you kind of saw, noticed, or felt from the game?
Well, this was just about the perfect response, really, that you want after suffering a heavy defeat. You go out there with real authority and you play in a way where you have full control over what's going on. That's what I felt Kingsway had today. I thought they had the better chances throughout the game. Luke Radonich had to make a couple of really good saves in the first half from Liam Murray and from Joe Knowles, and then Kingsway ultimately got the opening goal they deserved when Sasin Jegic cut in from the right-hand side, low left-footed drive, gave the goalkeeper absolutely no chance. His first goal in the league for Kingsway. He did score in the Cup last year. But yeah, first league goal for Sasin Jegic, so a good one for him. Frio's only real attempt to that first half came when Charles Cechlaz sort of hit one from distance and it went just wide of the post. And then really Kingsway sort of continued as they started the first half, really. I thought they were the more ambitious team in terms of being on the ball. But Fremantle City had a really good chance when Oli Lagalia slipped Alex McLean through. Midfield run from him, a little bit of a trademark that we're starting to see. And Adrian Sinagra came out, made a really big block, and that could have been a real turning point in the game had Freo gotten that equaliser, particularly after last week when Kingsway led and Bayswater got an equaliser, and it maybe set a little bit of doubt into Kingsway's mind as they went on to lose. But today, Sinagra came up big, made a big save, and then the main chances after that were really Kingsway's again. Murray, another curler, might have just been going wide, but Hayden Stevens wasn't to know, and I think he thought it might have been going in, but he headed away, took no chances, and then eventually Knowles clipped through for Murray to sort of run in, and he beat the offside trap and had plenty of time to stroke under the goalkeeper who was advancing. Mitch Oxper's free kick later on, tips around the post as well by Radonich, who had a good game, to be fair to him. So, look, it was a real performance of control from Kingsway. I thought they had the better chances. It was a well-deserved win and the perfect way to bounce back after that defeat to Bayswater, and I think they sit third only behind Bayswater and early leaders Knights now.
So I haven't seen Kingsway live yet, Tommy, but how do you think they're dealing with the expectations of being the team that
You know, they're not the underdogs anymore like when they came up from the league last year. They've got to be the Man City, the Arsenal, the team that's controlling the game, and they've got a bit of target on their back. So how do you think that they're dealing with that on the football pitch?
Well, I think based on today's evidence, it was good. Obviously, after last week, you're wanting to see a response, and that's exactly what we saw. They've just got so many classy operators in that team, the likes of Sampson, the likes of Mitch Oxburgh, keep naming him, Joe Knowles, Liam Boland. These are all guys who have all played to a high level. Tyler Garner came off the bench as well today. You have Aaron Williams playing in defence. Shane Cassidy was able to come in for Ryan Lowry, who wasn't in the side today as well. So this is a team with a lot of experience and who absolutely should be there and competing at the top of the league. And I don't think confidence is going to be an issue for them as the season goes on, because a lot of these guys have played in big games. And I think all of that is despite us still waiting to see the best of Liam Boland. He obviously got on the score sheet last week against Bayswater City, but keep an eye on him, because I think the further and further the season goes on, I can see him going on an absolute run. He was in some good positions today. I thought probably the best player on the pitch today was Knowles. I thought he was the guy that made the difference ultimately at the end of the day. Oxburgh and Sampson were very dangerous in midfield as well, and Murray always adds that touch of class in the final third, but I thought Knowles was the guy who was sort of tenacious and making things happen. And yeah, a great win for Kingsway now, who are two wins and one defeat from their three games.
Just one more from me from that game. When we think about Kingsway, previously we've mentioned about how they do have Knowles, they do have Boland. I don't think Tyler Garner was at the game today as well, but how much space did Murray have? How many times did he get a chance to go one-on-one with the player? Because, of course, you can't double-team all those players.
Well, I think when you have so many classy central midfield players, as Kingsway do, you're ultimately going to get teams trying to play a little more narrow and trying to sort of congest them and trying to stop them playing straight through the middle of the park. And that ultimately allows someone like Knowles to peel into the wide position, for someone like Murray to drift wide into the channel and get those opportunities in the isolation to run at fullbacks and to sort of come in board and really make a nuisance of themselves. So, yeah, look, they're a team with a shed load of ability. And I didn't even mention Negic, who had a good game as well in the first 65 minutes before he came off and Garner came on. So, yeah, a lot of weapons in that side. Just I suppose, a little note on Fremantle City as well. I didn't think they were too far off it today. They lost 2-0 and they were outclassed by the better team on the day. But they were in the game for periods and they had probably a good spell at the beginning of the second half, where if McLean takes that chance, you never know. But I think if you're Fremantle City or a fan of theirs, you've got to be pretty pleased overall with what you've seen out of those first three games, a win, a loss and a draw, and plenty of encouragement for Matty Sparrow to take forward. Tough game for them at home next week against Bayswater though, so let's see if they can bounce back.
And it's the kind of game that they absolutely would love to play. Before we go and talk about the game that I was at, which was Balcatta 2, Perth Glory 2, and the best fish and chips in the state, I am going to get us to just talk about the Perth-Inglewood game, because that was a game that happened on Thursday night, and I think that really shapes this Balcatta Glory game. Now, on Thursday night, Perth ran out 6-0 winners. That's right, 6-0 winners over Inglewood. Osman and Banks had a double. Fakeney and Snook also rounded up the goal scoring. And that game was held as a pretty big game when you had two teams who were winless before the kickoff. Of course, a lot of transition from both those sides, and even more transition happening right now for Perth with the news that Danny Hay is no longer going to be the coach in the next couple of weeks. And I kind of was really keen to see how teams would respond in this game. And from watching the highlights and watching the game, you kind of look at that and go, mate, that's a big-time result for Perth to come out there and really stamp their authority and get those six goals. But boy, from some of the highlights, Inglewood made it pretty easy for them. It was four goals on transition, one goal in from a set piece. One of the goals that was highlighted was Inglewood 4-on-2 as in they had four defenders, Perth had two attackers, and then that 4-on-2 became a 4-on-4. And so that's two players who run up there to support their teammates, and no one else
without recovering defenders.
And the Inglewood team didn't get back there, right? And you can look at that game and go, okay, well, look, Taki made some changes after 37 minutes. It's very, really rare that you see someone do that.
It was like a triple change as well.
Yeah, right? And so that's him admitting that, oh, look, we needed to make some changes. But it does pose the question where Inglewood are now in a bit of bother, because they're only what they were before kickoff of this Balcatta game. Balcatta were on 1 point, and if Balcatta had won that game, Balcatta would have gone to 4 points, and all of a sudden the gap from Inglewood to the next best, the next closest team, is now 4 points. Whereas if results go their way, which they kind of did today, which means that they could win next weekend and go from being last to being ninth. But yeah, it kind of made me think Inglewood are going to need to do a bit of changes, because they tried to play this really high line. They were caught between pressing and sitting back. And yeah, it just...
Is their next game, like, it's like Stirling or something
I
like that?
I think their next game is Stirling. And that's the other key point. The other key point is...
They've had winnable games already. Those were the games that where you do your, like... The coaches will do a 5-week plan, and these are the points we think we'll get. I don't think
Glory
Stirling was going to be that. Yeah,
get, yeah, they go
Glory at home was the 3-pointer, I think. Western Ice at home is probably 3 or 1, and then this Perth game was, you know, maybe you get a point out of it.
Maybe get a point out of it. Stirling, okay, we'll maybe get a point out of it. But now you're looking at that and going, okay, now we need 3 points, because goodness gracious me, if they lose next weekend, now not only is it the table that looks bad, but what happens to the players' mentality, where it's we've not scored in four, it's now 20% of the season has now been done, we've not scored a goal.
Yeah, they can't buy a goal, can they?
We've potentially conceded a minimum of 9 goals, and then you get into this mindset of, oh, anything that could go wrong will go wrong. But I'll be really curious to see how they make amends and change things up. But for Perth, they just looked sumptuous. They looked like they could have done whatever they wanted. And the idea that they score 6 goals, Osman scores 2, playing deep line midfield, by the way, and Olmec Ninkovic doesn't get any.
Yeah, I think he sets up the first goal, which is and Kieran Salinger overruns and gets robbed of the ball, stepping up in the back. And when you start a game like that, like, that's where you look at, I think, the character of a team. And it's like, how do you respond from a mistake like that? Because
everybody makes mistakes, yeah.
But how do you respond after that? And it just sort of went from bad to worse throughout the whole game. And it must have been horrible for the coaches and the players on the sideline and on the pitch. I mean, one thing like recent history has taught us is that generally those games they have next week, like the Stirling games, those are Inglewood's like bread and butter.
Yeah. What's the wood for them, right?
Yeah, right. But I think Kotaro Yamamoto may have come back in the team off the bench or something like that. I mean, they need targets, but I think there's going to be a lot of soul searching during the week and a lot of hard work to work out exactly what their plan's going to be for the next couple games.
Yeah, because I'm caught in two spells where I saw them play against Armadale and they pressed the crap out of I saw them play Balcatta, and they just pressed Balcatta, and Balcatta couldn't deal with it. They won the ball high, they transitioned, and they scored goals. But then I thought maybe this kind of game would be the game that you kind of sit back and counterattack, but they pressed high, and Perth just ate them alive.
And I saw them against Glory, and I think they sat back a little bit against Glory, but they actually had the better chances. They were actually really unlucky to lose that game on a goal from a set piece, which, you know, may or may not have been a handball, was given by the referee. So you would have thought from the first couple of games they were quite competitive, but you may have thought they'd lose this one, but probably not in the nature that they did.
Yeah, it was a alarmingly bad step back from Armadale. I think it's fair to say from Inglewood, my apologies. It's one thing to go down by the odd goal, as they have done in the first 2 weeks, and be in both games and have opportunities and come close and maybe feel a little, maybe a bit hard done by, that if luck had maybe gone your way, that you could have gotten something out of it. But to concede the goals in the volume they did in that first half, 4 inside the first 37 before Taki Nikolaidis made that double change, is something that, as Josh said, is going to need a lot of hard work and a lot of problem solving to be able to fix. The good news is that something like that can easily be turned around with some endeavour and a little bit of graft.
And you're right back in it, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, and we saw what happened to Kingsway this weekend. They were able to make sure they played with an element of control, and that's what Inglewood are going to have to do going forward. They've got a pretty tough run, as you say. They've got Stirling next week, but then they've got games against teams that are going to be sort of in that mid to bottom half of the table at the moment. They've got Floriat, they've got Balcatta, and then they've got Armidale. So those are four games that they're going to have to really get points from. And I suppose while some of the defending for the goals was very poor at times, the proof will be in the pudding with the response next week, I'm sure. And as for Perth, I mean, it was only 7 days before that they were 2-0 up against Stirling Macedonia. And for them to go 2-0 up in that game after about 20-odd minutes again, I'm sure there would have been a little element of deja vu. I think I may have even commented in the group chat that there was a feeling of deja vu at the time when we were all waiting for Sean to put the Moz on as he did the week before. But Perth obviously learned their lesson. They continued to put the foot down and they saw that Inglewood were vulnerable and they absolutely took them to the cleaners. So, yeah, a very good response from Perth, and obviously a fully deserved win and a victory that will get their season up and going. And I think it'll make that transition a lot easier between Danny Hay and Kenny Lowe. When you do have a win like that and you can carry it forward, it makes a massive difference.
And look, he'll be telling his players, hey, we've got one more game left, let's finish off on a high before you end up going to Danny, to Kenny Lowe. Look, the other game that happened today was, that we saw today, that we'll do a deep dive, was the Balcatta 2, Perth Glory 2. Goal scorers for Glory was Roy Rahamin and Sean O'Connor with a late equaliser, the latest of equalisers in extra time.
That goal.
Oh, we'll talk about it in a sec, but Balcatta were down 1-0, where the goal really came against the run of play. They had played some of the best football I've ever seen at Balcatta side play. They were so composed on the ball, they moved left and right. Blamo Kwakwa and Jason Corners had the run in. They ran the show in that first half. They did not look threatened whatsoever. And they concede on transition because Liam Miller has a really bad pass, leaves Trent K 2-on-1. Glory work it really well, and Rahman scores. But then they grow back into the game. They press, they harry, they tackle, they play. They get a corner. It's a whipped and delicious corner. Corners, I think he gets a touch on it to make it 1-1. And then Funwell do it, and Hassani Sinclair, two Perth boys from last year, combine really, really well. And Hassani scores a terrific header, an absolute trademark header. It's one of those ones that you just like, this is what a proper number nine does. And it's 2-1, and it's just all Balcatta. And at halftime, I don't know what happens. It's the classic cliche of a game of two halves, but the second half comes through, and I swear to God, I don't think they string five passes once in that second half. I spoke to John Wamsley after the game, and he talked about getting the wingers to kind of understand that they needed to press a little bit better because Balcatta played with a three, and so sometimes the wrong winger didn't release off the fullback or the wing back to then go press the centre, to press the wide centre half. And so for that first half, both centre halves just had all the time on the ball. But then it kind of changed up in the second half, and they had key triggers for when to press, who to press. And I don't know why, but I think, I can tell you why, I think the Balcatta players kind of got in their heads, because the last 2 weeks they've been up and they've conceded, and then they've either lost the game or they've had a draw, and the exact same thing happened. They kind of went into their shell and they sat back and they sat back and they sat back, and there were some terrific chances. Jankulovski had a great chance off a corner and he volleyed it over the bar, and then they flashed a couple chances across the box. And then later on, they end up getting one, and O'Connor scores. And like you were saying, Tommy, it's a terrific goal because it literally starts from a goal kick for them. And I'm sure the coaches will be delighted with that goal.
And for me, that was the most impressive thing. Obviously, I wasn't at the game, but having just checked back on the goals, when you're chasing a game late on in the piece, it's so easy to be a little bit more direct, to play a little bit more risky, to maybe try and take a chance and do something different that you've not done for the previous 90 minutes. But for those Glory youngsters to keep their composure in that situation, and they were impressed by Balcata's attack in the early part of that move as well. So they still had to play out of defence. And then, okay, Glory sort of got the ball around 30, 40 yards out from goal, and maybe Balcata's defence started to sag off a little bit, obviously, as they're trying to keep their shape and defend their territory. But for them to sort of play through the way they did, and I think it was 13 or 14 passes in total. I'll have to go back and count that again. That's just my rough take after the first look, but yeah, all praise to Glory for that goal. It was a sensational ending to the game for them. Interesting though, Balcata, obviously, I think it's a tricky one, because based on what I've seen in the early part of the season, you've got to be very glass half full on sort of the parts are clearly there for Balcata in the early part of the season. Like you say, that 2-2 in the first week. Round two, they obviously lead for so long in that game against Red Star before getting sucker punched at the end with two late goals. Minute,
they lose two late goals, but they're also up a player as well.
And then today, they're winning the game 2-1, and then Glory carved them apart with a great team goal at the end of the day. So I think even though Balcata is... standings are only going to say that they're on 2 points, I think you've got to be pretty glass half full for them. And look, the Glory are fourth in the league at the moment, and I must admit I was personally a little bit worried about their youth and their inexperience at the beginning of the season, playing against older bodies, this sort of new group of Glory guys, a lot of guys
undefeated, quietly.
Yeah, a new group of Glory youngsters coming through, and they're playing against some bigger bodies, and this is a bit of a new generation for them with some of their older guys sort of moving on. But look, props to them. The football they play is always going to keep them in games, as we saw today, and it delivered at the very end. Interesting to hear your thoughts on Balcata and the Glory, Josh, and whether you're sort of glass half full on Balcata in particular based on what you've seen.
Well, I'm certainly glass half full on Balcata, because if you think about early in the season, holding leads late on in the game, as you pick up fitness as you go through the campaign, we know that the Griffiths brothers weren't playing today as well, so they've still got good players to come in. I think you mentioned the role that Blamo Kwakwa played. I think he's sort of slipped under the radar as a player who's returned to the league, and he's always been a star. And you know, they've had to rejig a few things. Obviously, they had the bad injury to was it Declan Hudson?
Yeah, it was Declan Hudson.
And they were a constant for them as the two fullbacks last season, and also handy because often people wouldn't know, players on them probably wouldn't know which one was there, because you know, the identical twin thing. So I think that there's obviously a lot of reasons to be glass half full. Also great for them that Hassani got on the score sheet today. We know that he was, you know, a player that Glenn was has been keen on for a while. He was an admirer of Hassani, and if he can pop up with more goals, if he goes out and scores 10 or 11 goals or more this season, then I don't think they're going to be looking down too much at the drop.
Yeah, I wanted to just ask you, Kalichi, having been at the game yourself today, it's something I've noticed on the team sheets. They seem to be playing with that front two of Hinshelwood and Sinclair. And given Balcata were a team last season who did struggle for goals, I think Yamamoto scored something like 12 of their 26 in the whole of last season. I was just wondering how you sort of saw the dynamics of Balcata's attack, Kalichi, and how that front two looks, and maybe a little word on Shogo Azara as well, who was the new Japanese in-point playing just in behind those two.
Yeah, so it's a weird one, because it's not... So they play on the ball, it's a 3-4-3. Funnel De Witt is wide on one side. Liam Hudson is wide on the other side. Blamo Kwakwa and Jason Corners kind of anchor it up at the base of it. But then you've got Hinshelwood and Sinclair, who they kind of float between having a 2 and a 1. And by 2 and a 1, I mean a 2 up front, and Osawa in the hole, and then sometimes they switch it up and they'll have Hinshelwood. Yeah, they'll have Hinshelwood come deep and take it. So I thought between Hinshelwood and Sinclair, they looked really good. They looked really good coming short. They looked really good going long, winning flick-ons, slipping balls in there. With DeWitt and with Hudson, they've got some players who are really silky on the ball, really direct, and love being on one-to-one situations. And they could have had a couple more of those situations as well. And so in that first half, like they had a few chances to get in the box. And again, like, to be fair to them, after they concede, Liam Coyne pulls out this terrific save, this late on terrific save to keep them in the game. And then one of their players gets a lovely yellow card for holding the shirt as he's caught out of position. And there's only one crazy person in the crowd giving them a round of applause, and it's me. But I'm glad that you guys have mentioned that you're glass half full, because we've got an interview with Trent Kay, and he was so glass half full about the result, because he's going, look, we're in the change rooms, we're a little bit disappointed, but if we just make this click for 90 minutes, we're going to batter someone. So we'll go into that interview right
now.
Perth Football Podcast, Kalichio Sunwa at Grenfell Reserve here with Balcatty and the captain, Trent Kay. Trent, I've seen a lot of games, and it's one of those classic cliches of a game of two halves, because that first half, I thought they couldn't live with you. But in that second half, things kind of changed, and you end up with a 2-2 draw. So, mate, what happened there? Give us your thoughts on the first half and the second half.
Second half, they ended up pressing us. So we had plenty of time at the back on the ball in the first half, because they were just sitting off, and we were very patient in our lead-up play. So it did change, unfortunately. And then, yeah, they sort of started to get on top of us for a bit there. Although we defended well, it wasn't quite good enough in the end. Right at the death there, they snuck a goal. So, very disappointing.
It feels like it's the story of the season so far, obviously, three games in, but three times in all of the games you've been ahead or you've had a lead and you've ended up without coming away with a win. So did someone kick a cat or something like that? What's going on? Like, how do you kind of explain that?
I don't know. Maybe tired legs. I know we've got a few older boys, including myself, in the team. Look, we're playing good football. I think, you know, I reckon in the next two or three games we're going to end up winning a game 4 or 5-0 the way we're going. So I think, yeah, we've got to sort of build our own luck and play a bit harder. But, you know, compared to like the last season, I said we've been on leaps and bounds this season. So we're looking much stronger. We've got a good mix of youth and experience, and I reckon we're going to go far this year.
Look, I do want to second that first half. I've never seen a Balcatta team play the way you guys played. It was such control, such assurance. You did penetrating passes. Everyone was looking for it. Everyone was showing it. And when they did press you, you still had the little touch away to slip past the player. So I completely second that. But again, it's a little bit difficult. You know, I'm sure in the changing rooms, not everyone's happy, because you're now thinking, geez, it's happened again. And like you're saying, if it ends up a 2-1 win, heads are up, you've kind of got the monkey off your back, and you're now looking at bigger and better things. So what's the message that you're telling the boys? Again, you've been through loads of campaigns in the NPL, also in the State League as well. You've won it all. So what are you telling the boys in the changing rooms?
We're not playing bad football. Keep on doing what we're doing. You know, we're only going to get better. We're going to get more 90-minute games under our belt, which we're going to be fitter and stronger for. So, I believe that we will go far in this competition. We've just got to stick to what we've been doing. Apart from just conceding those goals, that first goal, you know, it's a mistake. Liam, you know, 9 times out of 10 wouldn't make that mistake. So if we cut the mistakes out, I'll give him the last goal. They got him behind us, and it was a good cutback for goal. But the message is just keep on going, keep on working hard at training, and trust me, we're gonna go all right this season. So.
Look, mate, I hope you do, because that means I get to come down here and have those chips that you guys have got here, the best chips in the NPL. So thank you so much for the interview, and all the best for the rest of the season.
No worries, mate. I'll save you a chippy for later. All good.
Big shout to Trent Kay for that. Interestingly, I spoke to Trent Kay and I asked him the eternal question, as someone who has played with Gustavo Marulanda and with Darren Nicol. I asked him who he thought was better, and he had this to say.
Do not adjust your set, listener. Thank you so much for your patience. The Perth Football Podcast will be back in 15 seconds. Sit back and enjoy the bossa nova.
So, yeah, what did you make of that?
I don't know. How do you feel about that one, Kalich? I know this is a passionate topic of yours.
Not what I expected, but I appreciated it nonetheless. The other game that we saw... Sorry, Tommy, you saw some of Western Knights. It was the 4-2 win against Florida. I think we've got another goal of the season contender, so we'll do a deep dive of it on Monday. But did you have any like initial kind of thoughts or things that you wanted to share?
Initial thoughts were that Knights were very good again, I thought.
Top of the league Knights, by the
top
way.
Top of the league, 3 wins from 3, 2 points clear of Bayswater in second, and fully deserving of their win today. Florey did give them a good game, though. They fought really hard. Alex Christodoulakis had a penalty saved in the first half. You never know what a goal that early can do to the mindset. Might have changed things a little bit, but in the end, it didn't really matter because Ben Steele gave Athena the lead when Knights couldn't clear a long free kick into the box. And then the home team just got on a roll, and we've spoken about that fortress and that home ground, the noise that that crowd makes, and they got on a run, and it was that bizarre long-range goal. It was almost a clearance from Sardell. It's one of those ones where the central defender, I'm sure you'll know this from your time playing in the back, Kalichi, not a ball-passing defender yourself, just someone who likes to slam it upfield as far and as long
dig.
As possible.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's a dig.
Unfortunately, though, for you, you never got the luck that Jake got with a long-range clearance which bounced over the head of Jason Saldaris and into the back of the net for 1-1. But do you know what? When you're top of the league, those are the things that go your way. And then after that, to be fair, there was some very classy goals from the Knights. There was a cutback. I think it might have been Owen Goodliffe, but I apologise if I got that one incorrect. Albert Louis was in a six-yard box to sort of turn home from close range. And then Christian Sandzic, ball over the top found him, and really composed stuff. You know, he was basically shuffled towards the byline by his opponent, but he kept his cool, quick feet, got away from his marker, and then just kept his composure and finished into the back of the net. Really good sort of solo goal, and yeah, he's a real smooth operator, as we know, to make it 3-1. But
just want to say, two goals after we told him that he needs to score more goals, whereas Tyler Gardner, after you've told him to score more goals, how many goals has he scored, Josh?
I don't think he scored any.
But to be fair to Floriat, they fought really hard, and Nick Ambrogio pulled one back to make it 3-2, and that gave Athena a bit of a lifeline, and they definitely made Knights earn it today, but it was the home side who ultimately got that fourth and ceiling goal out on the piece. Shay Donovan off the bench. Sloppy defending from Floriat, to be fair, a long throw into the box, and it was maybe something that they'd worked on at training, but Donovan just got loose, hit it first time on the turn, and four goals for the Knights, and three wins from three, top of the table. Life's pretty easy in the NPL, isn't it?
This NPL stuff is easy. Anything to add, Josh?
Yeah, can I just say, I'm going to be furious if that's a Jake Sardelic goal wins like the goal of the season competition, because I've got a massive gripe against these. Like, you know, I've no doubt it'll probably win, and it is...
You don't think it was deliberate?
It is a popularity contest, but I've no doubt that it'll probably win the Football West, you know, goal of the week that they do on the social media. But I think there needs to be intent. It's like I think that Olympicos, you know what Olympico is, right? The goal straight from the corner. They shouldn't be allowed to be nominated for goal of the season competitions because they're pretty much never intentional. And I just... Well done to Jake. Awesome goal to see. But I refuse to let it win goal of the season. So if it is up for goal of the season, I'll be running a campaign against that and against the Luis Italiano free kick.
Just also want to say, I tore my sartorius muscle before I became a defender, so that means that I literally could not kick very far, so could not shoot like that, so I had to play out the back. Just want to make sure that that's stated. You can ask anybody. I can't kick more than 30 yards, so literally have to play out the back.
And to be fair, I know we were all having a little bit of fun today, but to be fair to Jake, I couldn't score that goal, and I don't think any of us around the table could either.
I don't think I could kick that high and far.
Fair play. It was a hell of a hit. You've got to give it to him.
Speaking of things that neither of us could do, we were also at the Perth SC and Fremantle women's game.
Oh, you missed a game, Kalichi. Armidale 1, Red Star 1.
Armidale 1, Red Star 1.
More detail.
Yes, we'll go into that in more detail. Thank you so much. That, again, other things that we couldn't do. Pete Yorkobs, and I think it's Joel Chianese with the goals. Just want to make sure that we say this, three games in, and in terms of the Scotsman, three games in, three goals for one Scotsman and zero goals for the other Scotsman. You would have never thought that 18% of the season is going to be done and only one of them has scored goals. But we'll talk about that at another time. Like we were saying, we were at Dorian Gardens for Perth SC versus Fremantle. It was a 2-0 win for Perth with Matilda Bomb scoring from Kim McCartney's corner and Jess Flannery having a drilled effort from a free kick. I think the best player on the ground there would be Charlie Wainwright, followed by the crossbar and the post for Fremantle. who I suppose got hit six or seven times. Seven times.
One of them was the assist for the...
All right, six times without scoring. And something that Josh and I can both agree on is that a shot on target does not hit the post. A shot on target might hit the post and go in, but then that's a goal. A shot on target that hits the post and goes out is not a shot on target. But yeah, it was an interesting game because it looked like Perth could have scored 4, 5 or 6. They obviously didn't. And it looked like they're going to do what a lot of teams are going to do this year against Fremantle, which is get three people to just surround Laura Waltman, kick her, because as good as she is, she can't pass to herself.
It was a very impressive performance from Perth, with the caveat that I only got there at halftime today because I was at Kingsway. But yeah, you've got to hand it to the Azzurri, a lot of changes in the off-season, and based on what I saw in that second half anyway, it seems as if they gelled pretty nicely. We'll obviously go into it in a bit more depth in the women's pod this week, but I loved Ella Lincoln and Jess Flannery's performances up front. They obviously hit the post and the bar several times between them, and Dale Schroeder as well had a number of excellent saves as well to prevent the score being more than two. But yeah, a lot of props to Perth, I think, for what they showed on the day. And yeah, they're going to be a very strong team again this season. There's no doubt about that based on the evidence we saw tonight.
Ella Lincoln's a great player to watch live as well. I think in the women's game in Perth, there's nobody that has the close control of the ball that she does. She doesn't have the natural pace that a lot of the other players do, but she makes up for it with the intelligence of her dribbling and her quality on the ball. I think Jess Flannery, you know, as I've said many times before, player that I coached back in Kalgoorlie, she had lots and lots of chances today, and she's just got to improve that composure in front of goal. She did really well with the free kick, and it was an intelligent free kick as well, because in that position where you can't really get it up and over the wall, was right on the edge of the area, and it was a great run in behind to win the free kick that also got Maya Spatafor sent off for Fremantle City. So they ended the game with 10 women on the pitch. For Fremantle City, I mean, it's not quite as dire as Kalichi was pointing out with sort of the players around Laura Waltman, but it is a big step down from last season when they had Abby Green and Tash Rigby there and a couple of the other players that they had in the line, Jamie Lee Gale as well, a little bit of Kat Jukic, with those players either going to other clubs or being out with the Glory at the moment. It is looking a bit bare. They did have Michaela Lyons, who's been injured a lot of the last 2 years, come off the bench towards the end of the game. She came close with a free kick from a similar position as Jess Flannery, and they'll just need to get her fit and firing if they're going to have a hope of challenging, I think, for the top four.
I've just been thrown under the bus there a little bit. I don't think that it's as dire as that, but it, like, you could watch that game and just be like, who is she passing the ball to? So it'll be interesting to see how they make amends, how they change things up. I'll be keen to see what the stats look like from that and what changes they look like they're going to make. But if we were to look at it, I think that they might be at a risk of not making the top four, because as much as it's a 2-0 result...
It's one game, Kalichi.
It's one game. But it's like, how would they score a goal?
But it's one game. That's fine.
But you've had an entire preseason. So how, like, what... Okay, that's fine. You know what? I take back what I said.
I'm just saying it's one game.
And that's fine. I'm saying I should not overthink this any more than I am, and I should start digging up now. And so we'll also go and talk about the fact that we saw a Balcatta have a 7-1 win over Murdoch. And I know it's one game, but Lucy Jerome scored 4 and she looks really good.
Yeah, and I think she's come over from Newcastle. She's playing in the Northern New South Wales competition. She's played a bit in the New South Wales NPL as well, and she spent a bit of time over here as well. And Lucy Jerome is just lightning quick. Good touch on the ball, good left foot strike, and the one thing that you got to say, obviously 6 goals past Murdoch in that second half, so how much can you take away from that? As Tommy was saying,
it's one game.
It is just one game, something Kalichi's come around to. By the way, I don't think it's unreasonable to be asking a question of a team, you know, where are the goals going to come from if it looks like they're having trouble creating. But yeah, it is a small sample size, and for Balcatta, you know, that there's going to be other games where you're really going to see their mettle get tested. Was there something, is Judy Connolly staying around, or
We've had unconfirmed rumours that she might not be staying around, that she might be getting an opportunity overseas. So, yeah, I think it's too early to say unless it's been confirmed.
Watch this space. There might be somebody coming in for Perth very shortly, but I might keep
for
that
Perth. Perth or Balcata?
For Perth, but I might keep that to my chest. Might keep that to my chest very closely for now. Just to go back on that, I wasn't having a dig at you before, Kalichi, on your thoughts.
Tommy, it's one game, it's fine.
It's one podcast. And you do have a point based on what we saw today, but obviously there's a lot of pieces that have changed in that Fremantle City side, and they are going to take a little bit of time to gel and a little bit of time to work. In terms of Mum FC, worth noting that I thought they fought very hard in that first half. They went down 1-0 early. They did respond. They did hit the post 10 or 11 minutes in. They could have made it 1-1 then. They eventually did make it 1-1 late in the first half, even though it was Balcata who were on the ball a lot and who were doing a lot of the running, I suppose, in terms of trying to make things happen in that game. I thought Mum FC defended pretty well and they fought really hard in that first half, but unfortunately when those two quick goals went in, that was really curtains for them and they struggled to wrestle back that control. So yeah, a tough second half for Mum FC, and I'm sure the girls of Balcata will take a lot of confidence from that going forward. And geez, Jerem, I mean, the thing that impressed me the most is just the quickness of her feet. Like, to take a touch and then get the strike with so much power, so quick. Like,
and one of those goals was she hit it so pure.
All in one fluid motion as well. Like, there was no take a touch, wait, size it up, bang. It was very much bang, bang, bang. Like, all in one hit. And that's going to be a very big weapon for teams to try and have to defend against this season.
Yeah, she was really impressive in the night series as well and didn't have the best game against Red Star. Obviously, she was going up against Kata, who was also pretty quick. And I think for her, the hard part, and this could be a two-pronged problem, was whenever she did get past her marker, there was no one else in the box. And that's naturally because she's so fast.
She was against Quinn in the night series final.
Yeah, Quinn. And she's obviously so quick that no one was going to be there in the box to like get a hold of it. But let's say a striker that played for Balcata comes back and is going to be there again this season, then maybe there's someone who's going to be on the end of these crosses as well. But again,
She did have a potential goal rubbed out as well when the referee pulled back that quick free kick that Abby Meekins took as well.
Yeah. Well, look, that is it. It's been a pretty long full-time whistle. But yeah, any more from yourself, Tommy Dolman?
Just a quick shout-out. UWA Netherlands, 2 wins from 2, top of State League Division 1. That is awesome from them considering their past couple of seasons. They've sort of been down towards the bottom end of Division 1, so a great start for them down there. Just worth a little shout-out on the full-time whistle.
Also, going on from that shout-out, we've got a little bit of an insert to add from our Southern correspondent, Nick Carter, who was also giving some State League some love with... he was up at Percy Doyle for Sorrento and Dianella, so we'll put that in right now.
Nick Carter here for the Perth Football Podcast. So, I had the pleasure of watching Sorrento versus Dianella. The result was 0-0. I was hoping for goals. When you look at both teams, especially in Division 1, they've got some quality NPL players there for both sides. So, start with Sorrento. They press so well. You know, everything is just like a military. I don't know. You know, it's just everyone knows what they're doing. Everyone knows where to go. They make the opposition defence have to play long. They put them into a trap and they play long, and then Kilkenny just picks it up and plays football. When people do try and press Sorrento, they get the ball into midfield and out, Maranta and Kilkenny in there, and it goes into a channels. Big props as well to, I think it's Clay Gibbs and Keegan Chambers on that right wing, just sensational. Every time one of them's on the ball, the other one's overlapping. They created a lot of chances from there. Hamza on this other side, all you couldn't really hear was McGarry telling him, you know, shouting him and to get onto his defensive duties. I think that's something that he does lack, but he gives you that X factor going forward. Had a quiet game, was dragged at 70 minutes. Dianella, Angel didn't bring himself on, which I was quite surprised. He did give his young lad a run, who's obviously a chip off the old block. But I would like to see Keo and Angel up front a lot more. I think they can offer something a bit different. Angel knows how to score goals, and with Keo's work rate, I think in there would be a tremendous, and you know, you're probably looking at 20-30 goals between them both if they was up there together. Obviously it's a hard job coaching and playing at the same time. Bit disappointed with Zimmerino. I thought he'd have more of an impact in there, but he didn't. He was quite quiet in there, and I don't know if that's just because of the style of play and how Sorrento made Dinella played. They skipped the midfield. There was a few long balls going forward, and it kind of skipped the midfield. I would say that Dinella were the better side for the last 15 minutes. They had a little bit more of energy about them and had a few good chances, but to be fair to the keeper, David Keenan, I thought he had a good game and he kept him in it. 0-0. Overall, I think it's a fair result. On to the next one. And I do look forward to the reverse fixture. I think it'll be a bit different. Cheers.
Thank you so much, Nick. And Josh, any more from yourself?
I just want the listeners to remember that the real stuff starts next week. The amateur teams are back in action. We've got the Amateur Night Series final, which is going to be Wembley Downs against Jaguars. Unfortunately, my Maccabi wasn't able to make it out of the group stage, nor was your North Perth United. But the Amateur Cup as well is going to be kicking off Sunday.
The Amateur Cup is on the Sunday. The Amateur Night Series final is on the Saturday.
So there is a whole heap of football. Kalichi's just doing the maths about how much work he's going to have to do getting to all of these games, even more than when he was actually on the pitch. It's good he's a quick cyclist now, so he can make it between the venues pretty quickly.
100 kilometres, baby! Yeah.
Not as quick as Roberto Del Borello, I
hope. No, nowhere near. So will you be at the final next week, Tommy?
We'll be at the final next week, Leash. You're looking forward to it, I think. There's an NPL game on before that game at the Sam Kerr Football Centre as well. So
double bubble!
Next Saturday, and as we say goodbye to the listeners tonight, we'll take our beef off air, Kalichi.
There's no beef, it's just one game. We'll be back with the Perth Football Podcast next week. Look after yourselves, everybody. Be careful and be kind.
Bye.
Hello, listener. Before we go, just a quick insert from me to say, hope you have been enjoying our full-time whistle episodes, these direct after-the-match interviews and conversations that we have, depending on which games we go. As you can see, we cover the NPL and the NPL men's and the NPL women's. So if you're enjoying this, you can continue enjoying it because they are no longer free on the main feed. We have a Patreon, which you can subscribe to, patreon.com/Perth Football Podcast. It is the price of a long back topped up in the city centre. It is about, I think, $6 a month. So you're just basically buying us a long back topped up once a month. And that'll give you all of the extra podcasts that we do. So that's about 4.5 full-time whistles a week. But we've also got a couple new shows that are going to be debuting. One is going to be called The Coach's Corner / Coach Carter, where we do a little bit of a deep dive and analysis of a specific game. And we also have the Odds Show with myself and Sean. So if you have enjoyed the full-time whistle and enjoyed that and want to support us, you can join us on the Patreon, perthoppodcast.com. Perthoppodcast. If you search that on Patreon, you will find us. And yeah, $6 a month. Don't worry, the regular Monday show will still be there, and I think we might have a Tuesday show as well. But if you want the extra stuff and to keep supporting us, you can get us on Patreon. Take care, enjoy the rest of your long weekend, and see you around the grounds. P.S. Balcatta, best chips in town.